Good morning and welcome to Family Life. Your host, Selena Muhammad and Dr. Nadia Muhammad. Dr. Muhammad is joining us today. Our show is a little different today. We are presenting a community roundtable. Thus, our next distinguished guest is no stranger to this show, best-selling author Margaret Johnson Hodge. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent, Mirage Speaks. It's me, Allah, upon the Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. I greet the listening audience and my guests in the peace of As-Salaamu Alaikum. Ramadan Mubarak, it is our holy month of Ramadan, which is our month-long fast and reading of Quranic scripture to all participating. Have a blessed month. This week's discussion, Family Life Community Roundtable. Welcome, Dr. Muhammad and Margaret Johnson Hodge.
Good morning.
Come on in.
As pressing events occur in our country, the old adage arises, what may we do as citizens to contribute, resolve? Today we are going to discuss this during our round table. Across the country, African American males are being killed by police officers. We're going to delve into this specifically, but this has been going on for a time now. So first we're going to begin with a recent note in history with a direct experience of an African-American female former officer by the name of Carol Horn of Buffalo, New York. Margaret is going to share this story with us. Margaret, welcome.
Thank you, my sister. Happy to be here.
Can you go into the background of the former officer Carol Horn experience out of Buffalo, New York, and then tell us what the outcome was?
Sure. Well, Carol Horn was an African-American police officer working in Buffalo, New York, and she had been on the job for 19 years. When she responded to a domestic abuse case. So when she arrived, there were other officers on the scene, and one particular officer, police officer Kwiatkowski, was physically engaged with David Mack, who had been involved with the domestic abuse incident. And at a certain point, Officer Kwiatkowski put Mr. Mack into a chokehold. And Mr. Mack began to complain that he couldn't breathe. And this was in 2006, not recent history, 2006. And so Officer Carol Horn approached Officer Kwiatkowski on that, and she was saying, you know, letting him know, you know, the suspect could not breathe. At that point, Officer Kwiatkowski turned around and punched Officer Horn in the face, and he punched her so hard that she actually dislodged a bridgework. So they got into a physical altercation. At the end of the day, Officer Carol Horn was charged with obstruction of justice because her police department felt that she had no right to intervene on Mr. Mack's behalf, even though Mr. Mack was being literally choked by Officer Kwiatkowski. So they offered her a four-day suspension, and she refused to take it. And so then she was fired, and that left her with literally about a year left before she would reach her 20-year mark as a police officer, where she could have retired and received her full pension. So she was fired, but she never stopped fighting. Even though she had been on the job for 19 years, She knew what she had done was the right thing to do, that she was fired. I believe at one point in her journey, she was sleeping in her car because she just didn't have the financial resources to support herself. Despite all that, she kept fighting. And not only did she keep fighting for herself, but she kept fighting for her community. She was very active in her community. And so 14 years after she was fired in 2019, Case and get her pension and correct her record, in 2019, she was granted back all her back pay and her full pension. Not only that, the Buffalo City Council passed a law on her and named in her honor called Carol's Law, which was major, because that law legally required police officers to intervene against any fellow police officer who was using excessive force. Now, the law didn't say they could or they should. The law legally requires police officers in Buffalo, New York, to intervene in incidents such as that. And that was just an amazing, wonderful thing. And I firmly believe that Carol's Law should become a federal law. Hmm. And that's the background on our sister Carol Horn, Buffalo, New York.
Absolutely, absolutely, because we're talking about contributions that can resolve some of what's going on. And this is an example, and this is why I wanted to start the show with Carol's Law and, you know, the outcome of her experience, you know, receiving back pay, receiving her pension,
yeah,
accompanied with the back pay. What a battle that she's had over these, you know, 16 years. For taking a stance,
yeah,
against evil.
Yes, yes.
Very key. As the Derek Chauvin case is underway regarding the shooting of George Floyd, a former officer, Kimberly Potter, of the police precinct in Brooklyn, Central Minnesota, was charged for the death of Dante Wright, who was shot and killed by the former officer Potter, and was charged on April 17, 2021, with second-degree manslaughter. I wanted to bring this specific case up. Margaret and I were having a discussion a few weeks back before this incident occurred. And Margaret is going to explain further her experience with a young man in front of her home being stopped by the police. Let me give you a little background before Margaret goes into that specific story. Margaret was my next door neighbor for over 20 years. And when we moved into our subdivision, it was a brand new subdivision. The homes were newly built. And years after we were in our homes, we had a beautiful area where you could walk trails and so forth in our neighborhood. And in front of our subdivision was an Olympic-sized pool. And I'm mentioning this for a reason. So over the years, there were a rash of robberies, you know, that were occurring in the neighborhood. So I was working for a company who emphasized and stressed safety. And I wanted to do something. So I brought it to the Homeowners Association
And we actually had a police officer come in and speak to the community to start what is still in place today, over 23 years later, a neighborhood watch. And Margaret happened to be our particular block captain. And technically she still is. Margaret, if you can go ahead and share that recent experience with the young man.
Yes, sure. A couple of Saturdays ago, I had gone out for a meeting, and I came back home, and as I was pulling up towards my house, I saw a police car parked right at the edge of my driveway. And in front of that police car was another regular passenger car. And I knew someone had been pulled over. And so, like, my first thought was, well, when I, you know, get out my car, I need to see pulled over. Because it may be a young African-American male. It may be a young African-American female. It may be an African-American male or female. And I just had to check to make sure who was in the car and if they were okay. So on my way home, I had been listening to my gospel music because I do that sometimes. And as I was pulling, you know, I opened up my garage and I pulled into my garage and the gospel song was still playing. And now my mind is on the police officer and the car is pulled over. And my gospel song is playing. And I'm saying, well, I have to get out the car to see what's going on. But the Spirit, Holy Spirit, said, no, you need to sit in this car and just let the song finish. You need to sit in this car and listen to the rest of this gospel song before you go out there and see what's going on. And so I did. And it was only about maybe about a minute worth of music. So I'm sitting in my car and listening to the gospel singer, Praise God, for all God has done for them. Tears are coming to my eyes. And, you know, Serena Nadia, you know me. You can hear my voice right now. Just thinking of, just talking about it is making me teary-eyed. But I'm sitting in my car and I'm crying. I'm listening to gospel music. But another part of me is like, you have to get out there and see what's going on. The Spirit is saying, no, you have to stay in the car and finish hearing the song before you step out of your car. So I did that. I had some groceries. Get out of my car, open up my hatch. I have a great big SUV. End of my SUV literally stops right at the edge of my garage. So I'm able to see the car and the police officer. And something said, get yourself out the car. Keep your eyes on what's going on. So I got myself out the car. And then at that point, they said, you need to find out who's in the car. And so I was able to, you know, adjust my head a little bit without leaving my driveway. And I saw the profile. First, I saw the natural hair, okay? And then I saw the profile. And it was a young African-American male in the car. And I knew I had to go and ask him if he was okay. Pulled up. And something said, you need to tell the police officers what you're doing before you approach the young male in his car. And I said to the police officer, I said, I just want to go and make sure he's okay. And the police officer responded. He said, oh, no, he's okay. He's just getting a ticket for running a stop sign. I said, okay. I said, I just want to make sure. I said, because in these days and times, and I left it there. And the police officer nodded. So feeling a little more comfortable, letting the police officer know what my intention was, I approached the side of the car where the young African male was, and I said, are you good? I said, hey, I said, I, you know, I'm watching. Are you good? Are you okay? And he just sort of looked at me. He was on the phone, and he sort of nodded. I left him, and I stood in my driveway. So now the two police officers, because we have two police cars now, they're talking. And some said, you stay out there until everybody leaves. You stay out there, and you watch and make sure he's okay. So they write him a ticket, and the first police, the second police officer leaves the scene. The young man makes a U-turn. He's on the phone, the police that pulls him over makes a U-turn behind him. Police officer driving past the young man, and the police officer stops and pulls the car in reverse, jumps out of the car to the young man. What are you doing? What are you doing? So now the young man who is on the phone doesn't understand what's going on at all. He got the ticket. He doesn't understand what he did. What it was is that the young man was on the phone with his mother the whole time. And his mother was telling him, don't hang up the phone, because she was in fear of her son's life. But it's a violation to drive your vehicle with the phone to your ear. So that's why the police officer stopped and got out of his car again. In the meantime, I'm seeing this, and I'm saying to the young man, please put down the phone. Put down the phone. Just put down the phone. Because the officer is telling him, you need to put your phone down. You're driving with your phone, and that's a violation. I have to give you another ticket. And I'm pleading with this young man, please, because I could feel the officer getting really tense because the young man refuses to put down the phone. So I'm perplexed. The officer's perplexed, and it wasn't until afterwards that I understand why. He did not put down the phone because his mama was on the other end, and she was telling him, don't hang up. But I'm pleading with him. At one point, the officer turns to me and he raises his hand at me and he says, ma'am, I got this. And I had to step back. So all I could do was watch, hoping that the young man would put down the phone, because he never did. At this time, another passenger car pulls up, and it is the boy's parents, the mother and the father. So they pull up. Father gets out. Father has a conversation with the police officer. Police officer explains everything that's going on. The man, the young boy, gets another ticket for driving with the cell. Police officer leaves. I just wave to the father, and I do my hands to my eyes to say I was watching. I was keeping an eye on things. Later on, after he talked to the son, the father, Paul called me over, with the father and the mother. And that's when I found out the reason why the young man did not put down the phone, because his mama was on the phone, and she was saying, don't put down the phone. Don't hang up. Mm-hmm. And it could have went so left.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned out the reason why, when the father asked, why were there two police cars out there for a simple stop running a stop sign, the second officer who had showed up said, oh, because we was looking for somebody. Now, if I hadn't have been out there, had the person that the second officer was looking for, would they have determined, well, let's make it this young man? So anyway, I told the mother, because by this time the young man had pulled off in his car, talking to parents, and I told the mother, I said, and you tell him, I said, stop driving with his phone in his hand. If I ever see him on the road with the phone in his hand, I'm going to pull him over, and I'm going to thank him myself. And yes. But I said, you really need to have a conversation with your son, because it could have went left. And that was my experience. That was my experience.
Margaret, thank you for sharing that story. And I thought it was such a compelling story. And there's a great deal of dynamics going on here.
Yeah. If I could just chime in.
Oh. Yes, go ahead, Dr. Nadine.
If I could just chime in, thank you, Sister Margaret, for sharing that story. What I'm thinking about is, in terms of our community, we do have to do a better job at training our young men in the area of conflict resolution, because they just don't know, and we need to train the parents. We need to train family members how to defuse conflicts when you're engaging with the police. And so one of the things that I think is important, just as they have a backup car come when, you know, the police officer is stopping our young men, I think it is always very, very important to teach our young men to travel in pairs.
Yeah.
You know, even with my own son, I always, you know, I try to, if I'm not available to, you know, ride with them to various places, because young people, they're young, they think they're invincible and nothing will happen to them. But the instances that I use with my own son, if you're doing a trial or hour to an affair or you're having, you know, you're going to school or you're just going out to have a cup of coffee, invite a friend to ensure that you have someone to serve as a witness in case you get stopped by the police, and they can use their iPhone to record the entire scenario or the situation. And so, you know, that's one thing, travel in pairs. And then when you engage with the police, I know sometimes our young men, they get very confused when they start asking questions, and then the police officers, they get furious. But it's very important to be clear why the police officer stops you. If you're not clear, you have the right to continue to ask them, non-confrontational-wise, officer, can you please just inform me of why you stopped me? And if they tell you, if it doesn't make sense, can I just ask you one more time, why did you stop me? Because it's like a psychological warfare.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll come to tell you that they stopped the person for a good reason or no reason at all. So you have to use various psychological tactics when you're engaging with the police officers. One other thing, and I'm going to end on this. You know, sometimes our young men, they don't want, you know, us as mothers and fathers to track them. My son has a tracker. I need to know where you are, not because you're irresponsible. Because if something happens, you have to have a track record of where you were, time that you walk out this house, to the time that you get to your destination. I need to know if you got there or not. Because there's a lot that there's quite a bit that can happen between the time you walk out this house and to the time you get to your destination. So all black men are a target. Don't think that they're not. They are a target, and we have to promote unity, and we have to teach and train our young men how to diffuse, you know, conflict resolution tactics when they're engaging with the police. So that's my take. I'm going to stop right there, but that's just my take, our Sister Margaret and Sister Selma.
You know, thank you. And I'm going to reiterate, because I think this is important. We speak about resolution. We speak about conflict resolution. It's very important. You know, we must follow the law of the land. So conflict resolution is imperative, and our young people need to be in compliance within the law. So that's extremely important. The suggestion to drive in pairs, extremely important for our young people. You know, because there is a psychological. And Dr. Muhammad, I think that tracker is essential. I think that is, you know, good for several reasons. So that was an excellent, excellent, excellent suggestion. The I want to speak a little bit more about the neighborhood watch that Margaret and I were involved in, and is still in existence today. So I mentioned that pool in front. So the local school, we live near a local high school. And when that high school released at the end of the year, all the buses stopped, so the youngsters had to walk home. So literally, and this is not being facetious, the kids, you know, and there were majority African-American kids, but it was a multi-ethnic group, but the majority were African-American. And they would come, I would say, at least 100 deep because they wanted to jump in the pool. But it was a private pool in a private neighborhood, and it was against the law. So this every year this would go on, so the Homeowners Association, you know, Neighborhood Watch, we put some certain laws in effect. And one of the things we had to figure out what to do, we used to have regular citizens like Margaret and I, you know, man the pool.
Yeah.
But it got too overwhelming, you know, because they were going to push you out the way and jump in the pool anyway. They did not care. So we decided to hire, as a community, an off-duty police officer. And so what we then did, because we need to be looking at this conflict resolution, Margaret and I were among the parents who were down at the pool instituting conflict resolution.
And, you know, the police, they started showing up. They started calling backup. Now, the police were not partnered in that particular county, so that was one reason for the backup cars. But, you know, when those backup cars come, it gets intense.
Yeah.
And it was beginning, remember, Marvin, it was starting to get intense. These kids were getting ready to get arrested. They were ordering a paddy wagon. Margaret and I, and there were some other parents at times, but Margaret and I initially were sometimes the only ones down there. And we literally rolled up our sleeves and started talking to these youngsters.
Yeah.
We would speak to them in groups. We would speak to them and say, you know, listen, there's some laws here. And yes, a household can invite four guests at a time, but it's about 50 of you per household. That is not going to work. And so we were able to calm the students down and have them go on their way before something more serious occurred. And then I remember, because I was affiliated with the school system at the time, I contacted the principal and the administrative team and had them make an announcement. Okay, students, do not go to so-and-so subdivision and jump into the pool because not only did we do that, there were other subdivisions because once, you know, they started filtering back in our neighborhood, they started picking other neighborhoods, you know, directly in the neighborhood that they were going to, you know, jump into the pool, et cetera, et cetera. So just explaining to them what the laws were and that four people can be invited per guest. And, you know, some of the students there, they didn't have parents home during the day, and they were essentially being bullied. You know, they were being bullied, you know, to have more than one student come into the pool area. At any rate, with this resolution, we were able to get everything under control. Every household was able to read the bylaws, understand what the rules were, and today I think Margaret said there isn't even that problem any longer. So I think these resolutions are key and important. And listen to what we're saying. We're not saying jump in. You know, listen to how Margaret carefully stayed in her vehicle and watched the situation. You don't want to jump in and become directly involved because you can get killed or hurt.
Yes.
But you want to watch. If you see something that's not copacetic, you want to be able to report it. You want to be involved. You just don't want to ignore the situation. But there are ways that you can do it, still being discreet, and get the job done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. And let me just say, because with my situation, there was that moment, oh, my God, there was that moment where I felt in the next second things were about to go left. You know, because initially when I first approached to let him know, I just want to make sure the young man's okay. He was like, oh, you know, he's fine. He's just getting a ticket. But by the time the police officer had to write that second ticket, and the young man would not put down the phone, good Lord. And that police officer turned to me and raised that hand and said, I got it. I knew in that moment that in the next breath it could all go left. And like I said, I was so bewildered why the young man would not put down the phone. It wasn't until I had a chance to speak to the parents that I found out why, because his mother was on the line. It's almost like, for him, it was almost like a George Floyd moment. when the young man felt danger, and he had to reach out to his mom. George Floyd called his mama. But this young man was on the phone with his mother. And in that moment, that was the only thing between him and danger. And so I get why he didn't put down the phone. But in that moment, I didn't get it. And so to any young, to any parents out there, the young people who are driving, please explain to them if they ever get pulled over and they call you, just say, honey, oh, look, don't hang up. Just put the phone on the console. Just put the phone down. Don't hang up. I'm still here. Put me on speakerphone and put the phone down. That's important because had he put the phone down and kept his mother still on the call, it may have not had gotten as crazy as it had gotten. He wouldn't have got that second ticket. But he didn't know. He didn't know. And I'm sure his mother on the other end had no clue. So that's just another point, though. For people out there with kids, young kids who are driving and, you know, they're in a situation and, you know, please pull them over, put the phone down. Keep the call open, but put the phone down.
And I think you're making such a good point, Margaret, because Deontay Wright, this was his scenario. He was on the phone with his mother.
Yes.
And he did have another person in the car, a young lady with him. And this young man's life was taken.
Yeah.
And the officer says, oh, I made a mistake. I thought it was a taser instead of a gun. But yet she has over 26 years of experience on the police force and was a police trainer. And this young man, the father of a two-year-old, is gone. And, you know, the news outlets this week was interviewing the parents of this young man. And Margaret, that's one of the reasons why I want you on the show today, because this was this young man's scenario.
Yeah.
He was on the phone with his mother, and the mother said, don't put the phone down, keep me on. So that instruction, put it on the dash, put it on the seat, you know, put it on the seat even.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that speakerphone on. To keep it down. So that's very, very important. Thank you so much, Marla, for joining us today. To the listening audience, this show is brought to you by New Africa Excellent, Mirage Speaks. We're going to shift right now, and we're going to discuss specifically the COVID-19, the mRNA vaccines. And Dr. Muhammad, if you can lead us into this discussion, again, welcome. Let's get to it.
Okay, so just if you have specific questions you want to delve into, if you still could just lead me into the direction that you would like me to go in regarding this discussion.
Yes, great, yes. Let's start off with... We have a few things we're going to discuss here. But let's start off with the CDC. In an email to the USA Today, this article was reported on April 14th. Oh, there are over, and this number is rising, there are over 5,800 cases. And this is just of reported cases. Now, let me explain to the listening audience, there's not a mainstream of reporting activity into a specific database. There are different entities. So the numbers are definitely higher. But this is what they're reporting now. 58 cases already in existence of fully vaccinated individuals that have been infected by the COVID-19 virus. Of those 58 cases, 400 people required hospitalization, and 74 have died. And this is fully vaccinated with one of the three or four vaccine companies out there. More than 40% of infections were people in their 60s, over 65% were female, and 29% were asymptomatic. Dr. Muhammad, if we can discuss this a little bit further.
Yes. So before we delve into a discussion about vaccinations and COVID-19, I just want to bring up a point in terms of our community, since we're focusing on our communities, people of color, our Black community, and Indigenous communities as well. When you think about how the vaccinations are being rolled out and promoted across our communities, all of a sudden, you know, we are people who are accustomed to being at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to the healthcare system. What I do find intriguing and interesting is that all of a sudden, you know, these healthcare establishments and entities all of a sudden want to recruit Black people and people of color for these clinical trials. And so I find that interesting because we are always at the bottom, and now they want to recruit us. And so from a historical perspective, you know, people of color and Black people in particular have mingling feelings of trust and mistrust in the healthcare system for a variety of reasons. And so if I could just preface our conversation a little bit about things that have happened to us and why we're so apprehensive in even getting these vaccinations in the first place. And so when you think about what happened to our Black men in Alabama, and I know we all hear about the nefarious Tuskegee syphilis experiment, but it's very, very important because that experiment was conducted in 1932. Very, very unethical. It was conducted at a time where there were no known treatments for syphilis, right? It was a very contagious venereal disease. And after being recruited by the promise of free medical care, which is by the public health service, right, who's now the Centers for Disease Control, same people, right, same organization, there were 600 African-American or Black men from Macon County, Alabama, that were enrolled in the study. And they were told that they had bad blood. And they were enrolled in the study for approximately 15 years before penicillin became the recommended treatment for syphilis, right? But at that point, they were still being withheld treatment. And so, you know, as a community, we're very, very distrustful in general about, you know, receiving vaccinations. And then I have another example before getting, you know, addressing the question. What about the story of the Welsh sisters? They were illegally sterilized. They were teenagers sterilized without consent in 1973 in Alabama, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mobilized by many women to address forced sterilization. And so thinking about it was about 100,000 women to 150,000 women, low-income women who had to sterilize during the early 70s without the consent of women. And so I also want to give another example. There was the Holmesburg prison experiment on Black prisoners in Philadelphia. I'm not sure if you ever heard about this experiment, Sister Selena and Sister Margaret. But Dr. Albert Quitman, he performed a variety of medical experiments on prisoners. He exposed them to herpes, staphylococcus, cosmetics, skin blistering chemicals, and radioactive isotope studies, as well as psychoactive drugs and carcinogenic compounds such as dioxin. And so this experiment lasted for approximately 20 years. And it was financed by, okay, everyone, Jocelyn Johnson.
Yes.
Jocelyn Johnson. But I'm going to speak on this in a very few minutes. I know we don't have a whole lot of time, but I thought it was very important to bring up why we, as Black men and women, distrust the medical establishment because of the gross injustices that we have endured during our surgery journey here in America. And so I wanted to talk about that first. In terms of the vaccination, the COVID-19 vaccine, particularly we had mentioned that there were a gross number amount of deaths that resulted from COVID-19 vaccinations. And as you have stated, many of these vaccine deaths are underreported or not reported at all. There is a system called the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System that's hosted by the Centers for Disease Control for practitioners and, you know, medical healthcare providers to provide adverse events when a patient experiences adverse events when a vaccine is to be reported. But again, all vaccines are, all medical establishments are reporting these vaccine injuries. So, I mean, we have no idea how many people are dying from these vaccinations. Now, when we talk about COVID-19 vaccines, you technically can't call the messenger RNA vaccine a vaccine. When you think about Moderna and you think about Pfizer, there aren't vaccines in the medical and legal definition of a vaccine. And what I'm saying is that these vaccines do not prevent you from getting infection, nor do they prevent the spread. And so from a medical perspective, those vaccinations aren't vaccinations. They're really experimental gene therapies referring to COVID-19 vaccines as vaccines rather than gene therapies. And so basically the U.S. government is violating its own code. It's called the 15 U.S. Code Section 41, which regulates deceptive practices in medical terms. And so according to Dr. Judy Mikovits, she's a molecular biologist and she's a specialist in her field, she stated that the Moderna and Pfizer messenger RNA shots are labeled as vaccines, and news agencies and health policy leaders call them that. Pfizer's and Moderna's projections are described as gene therapy, not vaccines. The messenger RNA injections are gene therapies, and they do not fulfill a single criteria for definition of a vaccine. Again, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, their definition of a vaccine is a product that stimulates a person's immune system to produce immunity to a specific disease, protecting the person from that disease. Immunity, in turn, is defined as protection from an infectious disease, meaning that if you are immune to a disease, you can be exposed to it without becoming infected. Unlike real vaccines, which use the antigen of the disease you're trying to prevent, the COVID-19 injection contains something that's synthetic, the RNA fragments that are encapsulated in a lipid carrier compound, and the sole purpose is to lessen clinical symptoms associated with the S1 spike protein, not the actual virus. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to bring that up.
I think this is very important, and to the listening audience, we are following the vaccine. Let me reinforce what Dr. Muhammad just mentioned. If you listen to her very carefully, the vaccine is not essentially technically, under 15 Code Section 41, a vaccine. So it's definitely in experimental stages. If you read any of the literature from either of the distributors, they tell you as much. But here's what I want to reinforce, what Dr. Muhammad just said. And it's out there. You just have to read between the lines. But we're here to help you read between the lines. And one of the things that reinforced what Dr. Muhammad just stated, both distributors, Moderna and Pfizer, are now stating that the efficacy life of the vaccine is either 6 months or less. It does not proceed 6 months. And they are already talking about a third vaccine, a booster vaccine. Well, this wasn't mentioned 4 months ago. So this reinforces what Dr. Muhammad says. Dr. Muhammad, let's go right into the pause of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And you did mention Johnson & Johnson of this Pennsylvania study. The CDC and FDA has paused the Johnson & Johnson vaccine on or near April 14, 2021 due to the direct link to blood clots that are caused by the vaccine. So there's been a direct causation link. They're saying it's rare, but nevertheless, it is causation. And one of the ingredients they're stipulating is saying that the adenovirus antigens, they're saying people are having reactions to this. Now, I want to discuss this, but I want to mention some stats we spoke about earlier. Now, of the 58 cases, and I'll repeat, 65 were female. Well, already Moderna has had 82% of the individuals, male or female, react to their vaccine. There's the interesting part to all vaccines, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna, between 74% and 94% of the reactors were women. And just last week, or the week before, it was April 7th, and I'm giving dates to the listening audience so you can see how we are following the vaccine. April 7th. You know, let me go back to 2 weeks ago. We had Dr. Ramesh Pandey on, and he gave us some very important information. And one of the things he emphasized was underlying conditions. He said, you know, here's the thing. Suppose you don't know you have underlying conditions. There's no mechanism right now to fully guarantee. I'm not saying the CDC isn't reporting underlying conditions and saying who should and who should not take the vaccine. There are guidelines out there. But what Dr. Pandey was trying to emphasize is, are you as an individual aware of all your underlying conditions? I bring that point up because on April 7th, Moderna made a statement, and the statement centered around anyone who has severe allergies should not take their vaccine. But suppose you don't know the degree of your severe allergies, then they iterate severe allergies to the ingredient. Not everybody's aware of what the ingredients are because they don't use the ingredients every day. No. They don't know how they're going to react to it. So I thought this was a very important point to bring up. Dr. Muhammad, if you can.
So I know we don't have a whole lot of time, but there's two takeaways that I would like the audience to take away with them after this particular discussion. Now, if you think about it, if you were to tell the American people that the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine is a gene therapy, chemotherapy treatment that alters your DNA, do you think that they will go ahead and take your vaccination?
No.
No, you wouldn't think that, right? If you told me that it did not prevent infection and that it will alter your genetic coding, do you think they will actually take it? The answer is no. If you told them, and let me tell you something. Some of the symptoms that are being reported from this vaccination are paralysis, intermittent chronic seizures. These vaccinations of quote-unquote chemotherapy is causing blood clots, thrombocytopenia, and a host of other and deaths. And so, you know, we talk about really the benefits outweigh the risk. It's a personal choice, but it's definitely not a traditional vaccination in terms of, you know, the barrier that they promote, which is a vaccine, and really isn't a vaccine. So think about your options. Sister Selena had mentioned that, you know, the key ingredient in Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine for an adenovirus. And that can possibly explain the possible link between the shots and the extremely rare blood spots, what it is causing women to die. There were 8 women who developed a blood clot in the brain. One woman died from a severe bleeding in the brain, and there was one other woman who is now in ICU in critical condition. So these blood clots are killing people. It is very, very, very serious. And I think that Johnson & Johnson, I will have to say, that is a traditional vaccination. They are not using gene therapy, chemotherapy, technology. But the problem is they're using adenovirus. And adenoviruses are, you know, these are groups of viruses that infect the lining of your eyes and airways and lungs, your intestines, your urinary tract, and nervous system. They're basically, they can cause fever, sore throat, diarrhea, and pink eye. But also, it's a prompt to an immune response against certain components in the blood that causes blood clotting. And this is the root of the problem of the clotting. Not only is it prompting an immune response, but it's prompting an immune response against certain components in the blood. So I think we need to make that distinction with the Johnson & Johnson vaccination, and that's why it's been pulled, because it's causing death, essentially.
And Margaret, are you still there with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, wonderful. And I want to pull you in for a few minutes because I have another sister who mentioned this to me, and you and I have discussed this thoroughly, and I just want to chime in with you because you had many people, and I said, what in the world is going on? There's like a marketing campaign, some type of subtle marketing campaign going on for people to get vaccinated. And, you know, it may work for some people. We're not saying you should or should not do it. This is not this type of show. But what we are saying is be aware of your product.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, there is, you know, this subtle campaign, did you get your vaccine yet? And what's happening across the nation, and Margaret, I want you to chime in 2 minutes here, what's happening across the nation, people are thinking, and this is very important, that the vaccination is a cure.
Yeah.
And it is not. The CDC is still saying you still have to follow PPE, you still have to follow guidelines. So let's use Michigan because it's one of the hot spots. Michigan, last week, over 246 people, so follow the vaccine. This would be 246 that's been reported under this 5,800 cases already reported of individuals fully vaccinated who have contacted COVID-19, 246. Of the 246, 200 were hospitalized, but they didn't stay. They had to go to the hospital, but they did not stay. However, one woman is in ICU fighting for her life, and she's a teacher, and then another woman who is a teacher lost her life. This mm-hmm. teacher who lost her life was fully vaccinated. So we have mutations going on as well. We have different variants of the virus expounding, and they are much more dangerous. So I think behavior is very important to the listening audience. If you did decide to vaccinate, there's still guidelines you need to comply with, because this vaccine concept that's here now is not a cure for COVID-19. The COVID-19 is very much here. Mark, if you can chime in a few minutes on the subtle marketing of, you know, specifically in our community, Margaret, of asking people to get the vaccine. But here's what the danger is. If you're not aware of what we're discussing today, it can be detrimental. Can you discuss
yeah.
that in a few seconds?
Well, the biggest thing I see going on is Facebook. I'm on Facebook. I'm a writer, and I stay on Facebook. Social media matters to me, so I'm on Facebook a lot. And every day, 5, 6, 7 of my Facebook friends, and a lot of my Facebook friends I don't know, but they're posting pictures. I got the shot. I got this. I got the vaccine, blah, blah, blah. And if you're not aware, it's easy just to, if you see that like 20 times just coming up in your feed, whether you're consciously or if you're consciously aware of it or not, that's going to affect you. That's going to stick somewhere in the back of your brain. If you haven't really decided if you're going to get the shot or you're not going to get the shot, if you haven't made a decision one way or another. So it's like free advertising right here on social media for the vaccine. The other thing is for people who have plans to travel, like myself, you know, there is this thing going around, rumor, truth, I don't know, can travel. And a lot of people are making plans to, you know, travel next year. So that's another thing that, you know, that's another way for people to say, well, maybe I should get the vaccine. And then thirdly, a lot of the pastors are getting vaccinated, and they are encouraging their congregation to do the same. You know, I believe it's a personal choice. I believe that you should weigh your pros and cons. But if you're in a group of 10 people and 9 people got the vaccine, everybody looking at you like, you ain't got vaccinated yet? What you waiting for? Oh, my God. Don't be a conspiracy theorist. You know, so there's all this, also this close pressure upon a lot of people, from people in this circle. I know households, one married couples, one spouse got the shot and the other one didn't, you know? And I'm sure that's, you know, they may not talk about it, but it's like the elephant in the room, because I'm sure the one that got the shot is saying, I got the shot, what they waiting for? So there's still stuff going on. And you know, you just have to, I feel that, like any choice you make, you really need to find out as much as you possibly can about it. And be mindful that there are real pressures out there for you to get the vaccine.
Can I just jump in? I agree with you, Sister Margaret. I really agree with you. I think it's a personal choice, and I don't think individuals should be pressured into either getting the vaccine. And if you don't want to get it, don't pressure people, and don't put them down for not getting it. I think we have to be respectful across both ends of the spectrum. And so I think we need to think about the pros and cons. But, again, it definitely is a personal choice. One of the things that I wanted to mention before closing out, in terms of getting a vaccination, I do want to remind the audience that if you are to be vaccinated, there was an amendment. It's called the PrEP Act. It was amended in March of 2020. And basically it just states that healthcare professionals and other authorized individuals that prescribe, administer, or dispense, you know, any type of vaccinations or injections, they're free from liability. So if you die, if you suffer from physical or mental or emotional injury, you get nothing. Okay? And that goes for medical malpractice. That goes for wrongful death claims. That also sends out to the pharmaceutical and merchandising companies as well. So you get nothing. So keep that in mind. Uh-huh. They're free from liability. And so don't feel pressured, because if something happens to you, or your family member, you can't get your life back.
Yeah.
It's just that plain and simple. And then
very
I also don't think that our civil liberties should be compromised, or we shouldn't feel forced to get vaccinated for whatever reason, be it religious, be it personal, be it medical. I think we should still have rights, and we should not be oppressed in that way. You know, and so it's really getting to a point where, like you said, it's the elephant in the room. You know, you feel strongly about not getting vaccinated. Don't feel that you need to get, you know, you feel pressured, or all of a sudden you feel subdued by all the exterior pressure. Stand your ground.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
It's very important, the PrEP Act, which states that
practitioners in healthcare facilities and companies who are performing the vaccination are free from liability. Very important. One last thing, and I want to touch on what Margaret was speaking of as far as travel, is called the digital passport. And several countries right now, now countries are pushing back. Paris, France is one of them, saying we don't know 100% if we're going to do this because it'll affect tourism. But some of the European bloc has started to require vaccines, cards in order to enter their country. The CDC is saying even if you have the vaccine card, that you still should quarantine, although it's not being mandated, that you still require, you may want to quarantine. So they're still recommending that. The Maldives, wait a minute, listen to this. The Maldives, if you fly to the Maldives today, they are vaccinating you in order to enter the Maldives. So this is, key. Some countries are taking it a step higher. I think Belgium, they have the digital passport in effect, and right now there's no quarantine. But again, the CDC is recommending that you still quarantine. Again, it's not a cure, so PPE and such should still be followed. It's very important. So I wanted to mention one last thing before we call. Dr. Muhammad, did you have something to say?
I just wanted to add to what you just stated. In terms of places across the world and the digital passport that's being endorsed, like you stated, in a European nation, also if you're traveling to, countries such as Cuba, what they've been doing is they've been not vaccinating, but they've been giving international travelers a nasal composition of interferon. When they come into the country, they have to take the, it's called nasal ferron, actually, and it's a low-dose oral alpha interferon formulation, and they give the travelers that as a prophylaxis against COVID-19 for 5 days. And so I found that to be quite interesting as well.
And Dr. Muhammad, you're working on a synthetic Paxlovid. Can you give us an update that has been launched already for FDA study? Can you give us a launch on that, and it's a form of interferon, is it not?
Well, the nasal interferon, nasal ferron that's produced in Cuba, that's a synthetic version of oral alpha interferon. I know in the United States, Bold Immunity is a pharmaceutical company that actually produces something that we call Paxlovid, which is a natural occurring protein in the body, which is interferon, but Paxlovid is a homeopathic formulation of interferon. It's low dose. It's oral alpha interferon. It's a naturally occurring protein and is used as a treatment for COVID-19. And the FDA is closely watching how that could be carried out in a clinical trial setting. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Outstanding. So to the listening audience, this is Dr. Muhammad is feverishly involved in, this particular therapeutic, and we will continue to keep you updated. One last comment, because we talk about civil liberties and, how to involve the community, and this is the purpose of this show. So there was an article that came out, and I just thought this is rather interesting, if I may. The report of this particular article stated, the CDC should not treat racism as a public health issue. And this is a nonsensical ideology. And I say nonsensical because racism denies indigenous people. This is all of us, people of color, Native Latin Americans, where they have lack of access to health care, education, et cetera. So I think this is nonsensical, and I think racism is a public health issue. Mm-hmm. If I can get comments from both Margaret first and then
Dr. Muhammad.
Sure. Absolutely. It is a health issue because it affects our health, our emotional health, our mental health, our spiritual health, our financial health, our community health. Did I name all the health? Yes, absolutely. And it is just that simple. Because racism is someone being discriminatory against you for no other reason than you look different from them. And experiencing that on the daily causes imbalances in a person's life. So, yes, it is a health issue, and shame on them.
Dr. Muhammad, Sister Margaret, I have to conform to your belief system. This is definitely a public health crisis. It affects all people, but our people, black people in particular, are disenfranchised and they're underserved. And this is just another example of us being just weeded out and mistreated and just, disrespected. And we have to, as a community, take matters into our own hands. That's why we have to seek alternative treatment, alternative mechanisms to free our communities from this pandemic.
Thank you both. I want to send prayers to those families who have lost individuals as a result of COVID-19, families who are experiencing hospitalizations as a result of COVID-19, and that the God may collectively give them strength to carry out their legacy as a family. These are trying times, but what times in the history of humankind have there not been trying times? So we ask for prayers from the Creator in Islam. We refer to the Creator as Allah, to continually bless these families who are experiencing these challenges. I want to thank both of my guests, Margaret Johnson Harsh, national best-selling author, and Dr. Nadia Muhammad for being here with us today. You have brought such gems. Margaret, if you could tell us how to reach you, and then afterwards, Dr. Muhammad, how to reach you, and then we'll close the show.
Okay. You can find information, contact information about me at my website, which is M as in Margaret, J as in Johnson, Hodge, H-O-D-G-E, MJHODG.net, MJHodge.net, real simple. You'll find more about me. There's a link where you can send your email. I respond to all emails. So, yes, you can MJHodge.net. I am sorry. Yes, that's easy for me, MJHodge.net.
Dr. Muhammad, your information?
Yes. Yes. If you're interested in learning more about Paxamu or just some of the information I discussed today and you want references, I can provide those references upon request in terms of some of the issues that I was speaking about. But in general, if you have any questions about COVID-19, vaccinations, or alternative treatments, please feel free to reach out to me. I'm at drnadiamuhammad1@gmail.com. Again, it's Dr. D.R. Nadia, N-A-D-I-A, Muhammad, N-U-H-N-M-A-D-1, @gmail.com. Please feel free to email me.
Excellent. And my contact information, thank you for joining us today. It has been my pleasure. Salima, S-A-L-I-N-A-H-M-O-H, 77. @gmail.com. Again, that's Salima, S-A-L-I-M-A-H-M-O-H, 77@gmail.com.
This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellence. Mirage Speaks. Thank you for joining us today. Have a blessed day.